Hello, Zelda fans, listeners. I've been told I can call you whatever I want, as long as it's family friendly, and welcome to the 20th episode of ZUcast / ZUBC / whatever they're calling it now these days. I will be your co-host for this podcast, Elias Thompson, and joining me is
Eden.
We are here to bring you some awesome Zelda content. Eden, before we jump into said awesome Zelda content, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's been a while since I hosted. I mean, I've been doing the credits, but you know, like, I think it's been about a year.
A year?
Yeah, I know, right?
Wow, so that's like three whole episodes ago.
Hey, we try.
I think it's been about as long for myself, so you are in good company. We have a fun lineup of segments, I believe is the term the kids use these days.
Yes, it is.
Yep. Segments that are all Zelda related. Who would have thought?
On a Zelda podcast? What?
It's crazy, right? Unfortunately, mine is not one of them, but that's okay, because I am told, yet guaranteed, that these are all just as good. So if I listen to them here with you all, and they're not, I will be very disappointed.
Oh no, that's setting a very high bar.
It's an extremely high bar, and I will hold you personally accountable.
They're all too long for you.
Well, if they're longer than 2 minutes, I'm already asleep. So
yeah. So people, I don't know if it's ever been mentioned on the podcast, but Elias apparently has a very short attention span. I mean, I do too, but he doesn't like segments that are like more than 2 minutes. So he'll just sort of skip them, I guess.
Ever since the first podcast, I've just been shouting at Eden in our Slack, hey, maybe be shorter about everything. And they've been like, no. And I've just been like, okay.
I mean, you referenced how infrequently we release episodes these days. And it's sort of like, well, if we're not releasing an episode every 5 seconds, we got to give them like enough content to tide them over until the next time, or at least for just like an hour or so.
We have a fun time over in the podcast team Slack channel. It's a fun time. So speaking of a fun time, Eden, what is our first segment?
Our first segment today is, of course, Zelda history. It is the sixth part in Shona's, I guess it's long running.
Saga. Really, it's a saga.
It is. It's a saga. It's a history. A chronicle. She'll be covering the years 2011 to 2015, which was a really busy period of time for the franchise.
Yeah, full of remakes and spin-offs and
Skyward Sword.
Was that 2011? I thought that was 2010.
There was.
Wow. I must be thinking of Metroid Other M. Well, in that case, after the Zelda history segment, we also have a few other good ones. Right after that, we will have one called Hey, Listen, Reflections on the 35th anniversary. Something about a good anniversary, but titled after a horrible catchphrase.
Yeah, Brian is back. It's been a hot minute since he was on the podcast, but Hey, Listen is back, and Navi will not be involved or even mentioned, so.
That warms my heart. Yeah. My cold, dead stone heart. After that one, we will have a segment that I cannot emphasize enough how much I am not looking forward to hearing. Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land.
Yeah.
Segment one. That's the title. That's the name of the segment.
It doesn't really have a name. But so this is a guest submitted segment. It's from somebody who's on the Zelda Universe staff, but isn't part of the podcast team, but just felt like, hey, I'll throw his hat in the ring. It's Justin. So Justin is another member of staff.
Right after the Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land segment one, we have another segment, which does not have an annoying title or subject in any way, but it is peculiar. What if Zelda was an unpacking game? What?
I mean, we'll have to find out. That's, again, Randy's back with another What If Zelda Was segment. And this one, I've listened to it. It's interesting.
Wow.
It's nothing I would ever have thought of, but...
Well, that's why we have Randy, to think of the things no one else would think of.
That's what we keep him around for.
Reasons. After that, we will, of course, have the credits and the oops segment, also known as bloopers. Up next, right now, is Shona's segment, Zelda History Part 6, 2011 through 2015. Shona, if you would not mind, please take us down this journey down memory lane.
Hey Zelda fans, I'm Shona Johnson, and for the past few episodes I've been exploring the history of the Zelda franchise in order to mark its 35th anniversary. Today, I'm covering the years 2011 until 2015. This means that, among other things, we'll be looking back on Zelda's 25th anniversary. The Zelda series turned a quarter of a century old in 2011, and Nintendo was keen to celebrate. This was the first time that they'd marked a major anniversary for Zelda. The 25th anniversary celebrations included game releases, merchandise releases, and special events. Nintendo literally set the stage for the celebrations at the beginning of their E3 press conference, which began with an actual orchestra playing the main Zelda theme while video clips from throughout the series were played on screen. This preceded the announcement that a series of concerts called The Legend of Zelda 25th Anniversary Symphony would be coming to Tokyo, Los Angeles, and London. All concerts were sellouts, and the music was later released on CD. Three Zelda games were re-released on the 3DS that year. The biggest of these was a 3D remaster of Ocarina of Time, which improved upon the outdated graphics of the Nintendo 64 Classic and included an updated Master Quest. Link's Awakening DX was re-released on the 3DS eShop, and an improved version of Four Swords, called Four Swords Anniversary Edition, was available for free download for a limited time. This edition improved upon the original by adding a single-player mode, and it utilised local wireless communication instead of those pesky link cables. Another highlight of the 25th anniversary was the release of Hyrule Historia, a special book that chronicled the history of the franchise with tons of art and development information. Perhaps the biggest piece of information revealed in Hyrule Historia was the official timeline of the Zelda series. The Zelda timeline had long been a favourite topic for theorising and debate among Zelda fans, and the revelation of an official one did nothing to quell these debates, because some fans didn't accept it, at least initially. Zelda's 25th anniversary year was capped by the release of a brand new Zelda game, Skyward Sword on Wii, almost a full 5 years after Twilight Princess. However, unlike Twilight Princess, it was developed specifically for the Wii and incorporated full motion controls with the use of the Wii Motion Plus. Some players loved the motion controls, but others didn't, and a few found them clumsy. Skyward Sword was set as the first game chronologically in the franchise, and establishes the roles of Link, Zelda, and even Ganon. At the beginning of the game, Zelda herself isn't a princess. Hyrule as a kingdom doesn't exist, and neither does the Master Sword. And although Ganon doesn't appear in the game, his origins are explored. In fact, the land that would later become Hyrule has largely been forgotten by the game's main characters, who live in a world above the clouds. But despite taking place at the beginning of the timeline, Skyward Sword doesn't solve all of Hyrule's mysteries. In 2012, the 25th Anniversary Symphony, which had earned much critical praise and sold out the year before, evolved into the Symphony of the Goddesses, which would go on to tour the world from 2012 until 2017. I was lucky enough to go see it a couple of times, and it was a truly magical experience. Nintendo also released their next console, the Wii U, in 2012. One of the launch titles was a game called Nintendo Land, which featured a virtual theme park with mini-games based on various Nintendo franchises that were also designed to show off the Wii U's hardware features. The Zelda-themed minigame is Battle Quest, a game in which players' Miis dress up in tunics like Link and fight enemies with either a bow or swords. 22 years after it was first released, A Link to the Past received an indirect sequel with A Link Between Worlds on the 3DS in 2013. It takes place in the same world as its predecessor, but features new characters and gameplay. Over time, Zelda games had become increasingly linear, and this was especially felt with Skyward Sword a couple of years previously. A Link Between Worlds began to do away with the idea of needing to complete the game in a certain order by taking major items out of dungeons and allowing them to be accessed at any time. We didn't fully know this at the time, but Nintendo was in the process of seriously shaking up the traditional Zelda formula. Nintendo was also seriously getting into the process of remastering past Zelda games this decade. The next game to be given this treatment after Ocarina of Time was The Wind Waker, and The Wind Waker HD came out on the Wii U in 2013. Funnily enough, The Wind Waker's graphics, which had once been so controversial when first announced, had aged a lot better than most GameCube graphics, but the HD version still made them more visually stunning. The game also improved upon some of the weaker parts of the original, such as making sailing faster and simplifying the Triforce quest towards the end of the game. It also added a more difficult hero mode, in which enemies deal double damage and recovery hearts do not appear. 2014 didn't see any new mainstream Zelda games released, but it was not a quiet year at all. A rather surprising spin-off game was released, one that combined The Legend of Zelda with the hack-and-slash action of Dynasty Warriors. Until then, Nintendo had only allowed Capcom access to the Zelda brand, but this time they allowed Koei Tecmo to create Hyrule Warriors for the Wii U. The result was a fun, action-packed romp through Hyrule with an over-the-top story and a decent amount of fan service. Players can choose from a range of characters to play as opposed to just controlling Link, with each having their own special items, moves, and abilities. The fourth installment of the Super Smash Bros. Franchise also came out in 2014, bringing the action to both the Wii U and the 3DS. This was the first time a Smash Bros. Game had appeared on handheld, and it did an excellent job. Once again, the fighter roster was expanded, but no new Zelda characters were added. Instead, Zelda and Sheik were separated for the first time, whereas previously players would transform between them. The game also featured several stages inspired by Zelda games. Smash Bros. Wasn't the only crossover game to feature Link that year, as he made a surprise appearance in the Mario Kart 8 DLC. Now, Link and Mario had made cameos in each other's games before, but this time, Link was added as a racer, complete with a motorbike dubbed the Master Cycle. The DLC included a track called the Hyrule Circuit, which takes racers around, and even inside, Hyrule Castle, and they collect rupees instead of Mario Kart's traditional coins. The final surprise of 2014 was the unveiling of the next Zelda game for Wii U. Eiji Aonuma spoke about revisiting the conventions of the Zelda series before revealing that the new game would have a vast world to explore. He then showed off a trailer which featured an action-packed chase scene between Link and a monster we now know as a Guardian. But at the time, it gave away very little information. In fact, Link's appearance was quite different from past incarnations, causing the community to question whether or not it was actually Link, until Aonuma later confirmed that yes, it was. The trailer gave no title, but said that the game would be coming in 2015. However, this wasn't to be the case. In early 2015, Nintendo announced that Zelda for the Wii U would be delayed beyond 2015 and wouldn't even feature at E3. But Zelda fans wouldn't be left lacking, as this year gave us two games for the 3DS. Majora's Mask 3D was released, a game that many fans had been clamoring for since the announcement of Ocarina of Time 3D. It featured improved graphics and several alterations to gameplay designed to improve the experience. The other new Zelda game was a somewhat surprising addition to the franchise. Triforce Heroes is a 1-3 player game with a focus on fashion. Taking place in the land of Hytopia, players work together to solve puzzles in order to free the Princess Styla from a curse. Initially, many people thought that it would be more of a spin-off game, but Nintendo later confirmed that it was a sequel to A Link Between Worlds, featuring the same Link and taking place a few years later during his travels. The multiplayer aspect functioned a lot better than those in Four Swords and Four Swords Adventures, with the game supporting both local wireless and online play. Online play included the option to play with strangers, making it much easier to find other people to play with. those of you who visit our YouTube channel, Zelda Universe TV, may be familiar with our dub projects, which present the game in a movie format and bring voices to the characters. The first of these, Hyrule Warriors the Movie, was released in 2015, and we've since gone on to produce several dubs of different Zelda games. And that brings us to the end of this segment. Join me next time as we cover the years 2016 through to 2020. In the meantime, please share your memories of Zelda in the comments, as we'd love to read them. Maybe you were lucky enough to attend a Zelda Symphony concert, or you were shocked when the official Zelda timeline was revealed. Let us know. I'm Shona Johnson, and until next time, it's back to our hosts.
Shona, I cannot thank you enough for listing out every single one of those Zelda-related games and or events that happened in those 5 years. Who could forget such hits as Nintendo Land, where instead of giving us a real new Metroid game, they gave us a mini game alongside Zelda and F-Zero, amongst other dead franchises. Eden, what was your favorite game and or event mentioned in Shona's segment?
Well, I was pretty partial to Hyrule Warriors, as I've gone on at length on the podcast before.
Which I have totally listened to at length before, yes.
Yes. I'm sure you have. Well, for your sake, and for the sake of anybody new to the podcast, I am a Dynasty Warriors nerd. I'm I also recently got into Samurai Warriors. So I will just button mash all those games. I'll play them for hours. And when you put Zelda in there, which is another thing I love, it's sort of the love child of two of my favorite franchises. So Hyrule Warriors is one of the greatest games of all time in my world. But not in everybody's world. But, you know, it's good. The story was pretty bad, but, you know. It's a bad fan fiction. That's how I put it. But fun!
Cool. My favorite amongst the list was probably A Link Between Worlds. Far from perfect, but definitely better than Skyward Sword or Triforce Heroes. I also want to shout out the Symphony that was, in my opinion, fairly short-lived, but was a fun time. I did manage to actually go to one down in Austin, Texas, many moons ago, before I was with Zelda Universe. Did you ever have a chance to see that?
I saw it twice. So
wow.
I saw it the original Symphony of the Goddesses, and then I saw Symphony of the Goddesses Second Quest, which was basically a fake rebranding of the same thing.
But when they added the Skyward Sword music, I believe.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But it was magical. I went to the Mann Center in Philly. I think there were some Zelda reorchestrated people there as well. I didn't see them, except for Jaron Moore, who was on stage. But
I think a lot of the Zelda reorchestrated people were involved in that. So
oh yeah, no, they helped put it together. But I think some of them were in the area and were like in the audience as well. So, but I never got to meet them, which. Because there are too many people there dressed as Tingle. And anyway, it was a magical time and they should do it again.
Yes, excluding Tingle cosplayers.
Speaking of Zelda reorchestrated, though, so one thing that Shona didn't mention that really grinds my gears is a phrase I don't say ever, is their Twilight Symphony project. Now, this was like their attempt to put like a full album out at once. Basically, it wound up being like over 3 hours long. It was like three discs. I think they also released it on vinyl. They had a whole like Kickstarter for it, and they used like super high quality like instrument. What's the term? Fake instruments, but of high quality. They also used some real instruments. They had some soloists, and they had a choir that was directed by the same guy who directed the Skyrim choir, and they also had the shouts in it. It was really awesome, and I have one of the physical copies. There's only like 2,000. Not to brag, but anyway, it wound up actually, I don't know what happened to it, because like they were going to be putting it on iTunes or whatever it's called now, and there it was going to be like a big release, and then it just sort of died. But if you want to hear Twilight Symphony, it's on YouTube, and I think Zelda Universe also has a hosts it on our music page. But I highly recommend it. Even if you're not super into Twilight Princess for whatever reason, then it's still just a great musical experience.
Yeah, it's I mean, when I saw the actual symphony, the best part of it was whenever they did the Twilight Princess segment. And I, not to brag, but also have the physical album of Twilight Pushes Up Glasses. It's a really great album. Any way you're able to listen to it, I would recommend doing it. Whether or not you like Twilight Princess specifically or just Zelda in general, it's top tier Zelda music. Yes.
Yes. Or if, it's like if you're just into the classical music. I think I played it for my mom. She can't play video games to save her life, and but she loved the music.
What's the next segment, Eden?
Our next segment is another edition of Hey Listen from Brian. He's back. He's been gone a while, but he's back. And he's going to talk about more of the immediate past, not like 10 years ago past, about the 35th anniversary that is coming to a close, even though it never really came to an open. And he's going to talk about what could or should have been. Take it away, Brian.
The Legend of Zelda launched on the Nintendo Famicom way back in 1986. Fast forward to 2021, and that's 35 years for the series. 2021 has come and gone, and while Nintendo celebrated Zelda's 35th anniversary, there are many fans, myself included, feeling unsatisfied. In the past, Nintendo has celebrated their big anniversaries with re-releases of games on virtual consoles, bundling previous games into different collections, releasing music collections, hosting concerts, and just so much more. With this year nearing its end, we have gotten very little in the way of celebrating Zelda's 35 enchanting years. Nintendo announced that Skyward Sword HD was coming to the Nintendo Switch, that they were releasing Skyward Sword Joy-Cons, there's going to be Age of Calamity DLC, and there is a released Game & Watch that includes the first two Zelda games and Link's Awakening. Granted, this is a nice celebration for arguably the second biggest franchise that Nintendo owns, but it just pales in comparison to the love that Nintendo gave to Mario last year. Last year, Nintendo similarly celebrated Mario's 35th anniversary in 2020, but with massive amounts of stuff to praise the mustachioed plumber. In 2020, we got Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury on the Nintendo Switch. We got Super Mario 3D All-Stars on the Nintendo Switch. We got a Super Mario-themed Nintendo Switch. We got a Super Mario Bros. Game & Watch, Mario Kart Live Home Circuit, Mario Kart Tour Events, Super Mario 35 on the Nintendo Switch online services, Mario Legos, Mario crossover items in Animal Crossing New Horizons, a Splatoon 2 Splatfest, My Nintendo Rewards, heck, there was even a Mario merchandising collaboration with Puma and Black Milk. I want to start by saying that COVID-19 probably had a lot to do with the lack of celebration for Zelda's 35th anniversary, seeing as licensing, marketing, promotional relations, development, etc., all of these things take a lot of time and effort. Nintendo most likely had all of Mario's 35th stuff started and near completion in 2019 before the world shut down. And I'm not saying that Nintendo should have just worked harder in order to make Zelda's 35th anniversary celebration on par with Mario's, because we all know that they couldn't have just worked harder. That's not how these things work. I'm just saying that here are some of the things I would have loved to seen for Zelda's 35th anniversary. I want to take the time to acknowledge that we do have some information on upcoming Zelda projects. We obviously know that the sequel to Breath of the Wild is in development without a release date. Nintendo has also recently announced the NSO expansion pack, which includes Nintendo 64 games. Ocarina of Time launched with this service, and Majora's Mask is coming at a later date. And while all of these Zelda inclusions are a great addition to Zelda's 35th anniversary, just like many others, I would have loved to see a little bit more. The first thing that comes to mind is a 3D Zelda collection of games on Switch. Ideally, for me, it would include Grezzo's remakes of Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask for the 3DS, and it would include Wind Waker HD and Twilight HD from the Wii U. Now, one collection with four games seems like a lot to ask for, and in all honesty, it probably is. The Nintendo that I've come to understand would seemingly never bundle all of those games for $50 to $60. But I would have happily paid for two separate titles, one for the 3DS collection and one for the Wii U collection. Just give me that option. Now I know it might not be a popular opinion to pay over $100 for four games that I already own, but this is just one man's opinion. However, with the Nintendo Switch Online expansion including Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, it's understandable as to why Nintendo didn't make a 3D collection for Zelda. However, I would still love for Nintendo to port over the Wii U versions of Wind Waker HD and Twilight Princess HD on the Switch, especially after replaying through Skyward Sword this year. I would just love the ability to play these games on my Switch. The second thing on my list would be for Nintendo to remake a Game Boy Color Zelda. I know that Grezzo has been busy making Miitopia for the Switch, but I think that we can all agree that we would have rather seen their talents be put to, quote, better, unquote, use on remakes of Oracle of Ages in Seasons. With already having the assets from 2019's Link's Awakening, announcing that Grezzo would be working on Ages and Seasons would have been such an easy home run for Nintendo that it's kind of left me puzzled as to why they haven't done it already. Now, these two games seem like the obvious choice and direction for Grezzo's next game, especially after Link's Awakening. But with Nintendo recently reviving Metroid Dread from the grave, I was secretly hoping that they would revive another lost Nintendo game, the third entry in the Oracle games codenamed Mystical Seed of Wisdom, that never saw the light of day. I think this would have been such a wild announcement to make for Zelda's 35th anniversary, and it would have gotten fans thrilled. Following Mario's footsteps, a Zelda 35 game for the Nintendo Switch Online services would have been an excellent addition to the celebration. Imagine each player trying to clear out a room full of enemies, and each time somebody does, their opponents have to defeat more enemies in order to proceed, all the while trying to speedrun through a randomized dungeon. Even if it wasn't exactly this, there seems to be a lot of different missed opportunities when it comes to Zelda's 35th celebration. And, as a huge Animal Crossing fan, some iconic Zelda items should have been lumped in with Animal Crossing New Horizons 2.0 update. Give us items like the Master Sword, the Triforce, or a miniature of Hyrule Castle. Give us different outfits of Link and Ganondorf, Sheik and Zelda, things that we can just dress up our villagers in. There are just so many different opportunities that could have happened, but maybe we just have to chalk it up to COVID-19 and the state of the world. Perhaps working from home took a bigger toll on Nintendo than I originally expected. I do want to note that while I am appreciative of the things that we got for Zelda's 35th anniversary, I don't want to come across as if I'm criticizing Nintendo. However, I am just sad that Nintendo only gave Zelda a fraction of what they gave to Mario. I understand that Mario is a household name, so I can understand why we didn't see a clothing collaboration or different Lego sets when it comes to Zelda. But I think that the lack of fanfare around its 35th anniversary just seems like it was done out of obligation rather than a celebration. There are so many wonderful titles that could have gotten some love here and that were seemingly never thought of. We talked about the Oracle series, but what about A Link Between Worlds or my personal favorite, The Minish Cap? While omissions like the DS series, Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks, are understandable due to their heavy reliance on touch controls, I am sad to see so many of my favorite Zelda titles overlooked for its anniversary. Now, it wouldn't surprise me that some of these things that I have mentioned are eventually coming, but with the current state of the world, it's just taking longer for Nintendo to get everything in order before being able to announce things. Would I still want a Zelda Wii U HD collection on Switch, even if it doesn't come out for Zelda's 35th anniversary? Absolutely. Can I see them still releasing a Zelda 35 on Nintendo Switch Online service next year? Of course. So I'm choosing to stay hopefully optimistic when it comes to more Zelda on the Nintendo Switch in the coming year. What do you want to see for the future of Zelda? And please let me know. The best place to do that is on Twitter, and you can find me at It's a Me BT. That's ItzaMeBT. Catch you guys next time on Hey, Listen!
Alrighty, thanks, Brian. Elias, what would you have liked to have seen for the 35th anniversary? I mean, Brian mentioned like a 3D All-Star sort of thing, even like a re-release of the Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask 3D on the Switch. What would you have liked to have seen?
I mean, all those are pretty good ideas, and I would have liked to see them, even if they included games that I barely play. Obviously, I would like Twilight Princess to be on as many consoles as possible. Continuing its consoles in a row ever since the GameCube, then the Wii, then the Wii U. That's Why true. Not put it on the Switch as well? Perhaps with better textures.
That's probably asking too much, but...
It really is, especially considering the Pokemon remakes I just played. So, would have been cool. Honestly, Brian had some good ideas there, and I agree with most of them. But anything more, I think, than a Zelda Game & Watch, which I still have not even taken out of the box, probably would have been good. Hopefully, we'll get something more maybe for 40. Maybe they consider 40 more significant than 35. I guess we'll wait and see in the year 2026.
Oh, God. We're all going to be like old people.
Old. Well, joke's on you. I already am.
I kind of would have... I was actually genuinely shocked that we didn't get, like, Wind Waker HD and or Twilight Princess HD re-release, because Nintendo's been re-releasing everything they released for the Wii U on the Switch, so...
Everything that wasn't already a re-release itself.
That's true.
Wind Waker and Twilight Princess were already re-releases, so I wasn't surprised that we didn't get any of what we didn't get, but obviously I still think it would have been nice.
Yeah. Also could use another Symphony, but I guess it's 35. 35 is kind of a weird number.
Nintendo seems to agree with you. I think 40 would be the most until whatever the heck they do for 50.
Oh, God. Oh, not 50.
Yes.
So old.
50.
So old.
Speaking of so old, we now turn our attention to a segment based on a character who is too old to do anything that he sets out to do, and yet still tries to fit himself into a, quote, fairy costume, and tries to be more whimsical than the Mario series combined, somehow. All by himself. I am, of course, talking about the character Tingle, of which I have a hate-hate relationship with, and his video game that I think was the only Tingle game released outside of Japan. Tingle's Rosy Ruby Land, where we will have Justin, guest contributor, here to talk about the game. Justin, please justify why you've chosen to talk about this.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for tuning into the Zelda Universe podcast. My name is Justin Fulvarsic, and I'm here to talk about one of my favorite spin-off games in the Zelda series that a lot of people probably don't know about, especially if you live in the US like me, because this game never actually came to the United States for reasons that we'll talk about. The game is called Freshly Picked Tingle's Rosy Ruby Land. The game was developed by this company called Vanpool, and it released in 2006, I think, for the original Nintendo DS. And as the name suggests, it does indeed star Tingle as the playable character. So you're probably wondering, what do you even do in this game? What is it about? Well, you actually play as, of course, Tingle. But at the beginning of the game, it's sort of like an origin story. Like, you actually input a name for your character. Special mention that if you put in Tingle, it tells you you can't choose that name. And so this guy, he's just a 35-year-old guy with no girlfriend. And he is contacted by this being called Uncle Ruby. Now, Uncle Ruby is just a giant Ruby with a face and a body. So he tells you... riches can be yours if you
gather rupees and throw them into this pool directly to the west of your house. You'll get to go to Rupee Land, which essentially is just paradise. Like, flat out, what they're trying to say is you can just retire and live in paradise. And so basically, the entire point of this game is to just go around making money. And then as you make money, you throw it into this pool and grow this tower. And then eventually some other stuff happens towards the end, but that's all spoiler talk. Which, by the way, we will be talking about in another segment of this. Today we're just going to keep it spoiler free, but we will discuss that later on if you're not really interested in playing the game, because I have a lot I want to talk about here. But that's not really all that there is to the game. I know it sounds really simple. Oh, go make money. Well, it actually plays a lot more like a Zelda game, kind of, except without the combat. The combat is really different. Like, the combat in this game essentially involves Tingle just walking into an enemy, and then a cartoony, like, Looney Tunes-style dust cloud shows up, and you tap on it as fast as you can and hope Tingle doesn't die. But, thankfully, because Tingle is a weak little wussy, he can hire bodyguards. And these are not optional. I can't imagine going through this game without the bodyguards. And in fact, it even very heavily, very, very heavily recommends it to you by forcing some of them on you. But the real meat of this game actually comes from just exploring the different areas of the world. It's actually very large. There's, I believe, 11 areas spread across 3 continents. And the way that it works is, once you throw enough rupees into the tower, it grows bigger, and Tingle can jump from it with his balloon to go further in the world. So the taller the tower, the further he can go. And this is really where all of the fun of the game comes, because in the areas, you do stuff like complete side quests or just gather things, find rupees, fight enemies. There is a sense of progression. It is ridiculous as the whole concept sounds. It actually does make sense. You do eventually need to travel to all the areas. You can't just sit there and grind something forever. I mean, you can, but once you reach the end of the game, you're going to hit a roadblock that's going to say, hey, so you need to collect these things. Which, again, spoiler talk. So I want to talk for a second about the bartering system. The way it works is that things don't have a set price, right? When you go to buy something from a shop, they say, okay, how much money are you going to give me for it? And I believe that they tell you a price, but you don't have to pay that price usually. Like, you can pay a little bit less, you can kind of haggle. But everything in the game works this way, even the rewards. Like, say, near the beginning of the game, there's a side quest where you rescue a little girl. And when you talk to her mother goes, all right, I'd like to give you a reward. How much do you want? And if you say some ridiculous amount, then she's just going to be like, I'm not paying you that much. Get out. And you get nothing. Which sounds really great in theory, but in practice, it's kind of a nightmare. Because the whole game is kind of built around you successfully doing these quests and getting the rewards. So if you screw these up, you're just going to save scum it. Because otherwise you're going to be sitting there grinding for a long time, and that is boring. Oh yeah, and I almost forgot to mention, if you make an offer and it gets rejected, they take your money anyway. Which, thankfully, there is a system that prevents the bodyguards from doing this. Like, you make a deposit with the guy that runs the bodyguard salon, which is where you hire them at. They're called salons. I think it was supposed to be saloon, I don't know. But you make a deposit with them, and then when you make an offer to a bodyguard, if they reject it, the guy will give you your money back. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about sort of the different things that you do. Now, when you're going through the areas, I kind of said that you collect things, right? Well, that's because this game has a crafting system. And don't get too excited when I say crafting system, because everything you make goes in a bottle. Yeah, your inventory, by the way, is about 23 bottles. I think they're called jars, but, I mean, they're empty bottles. You can also get a shovel and something else, but, I mean, it's generally most of what you're going to be carrying around is in a bottle. And fun fact, you actually later in the game, you learn how to make bombs. The bombs have to be made, and it's one bomb per bottle, which thankfully there you don't need them as often as you would in a Zelda game, but it's definitely a bit of an annoyance too, because you actually have to collect everything for it. But as you gather more and more ingredients, you can eventually take them back home to Tingle's house, and he has a cooking pot where you can either follow a recipe, which you can buy recipes from one of the shops in town, or you can find them around the world, or you can just kind of go at it. But I generally don't recommend free cooking, because 9 times out of 10, you just make nothing, and that's a total waste of your resources. Now, the game very heavily encourages you to continue to craft throughout, because you can actually make things and sell them for much more than you would have gotten if you had just sold the ingredients. Like, for example, you can make fruit juice or something, and then you can sell that to one of the stores in town, and you'll generally get like a few hundred rupees, whereas if you sold the ingredients, you'd probably just get a few dozen. It's also worth mentioning that the materials and like certain things that you find along with your crafted stuff, those are the only things in the game that you don't actually haggle. Like, you take them to the shop and they say, this is what you get. And you take it or you leave it. So crafting is just one way that you can make money, which actually it's a really good stopgap for when you run out of things to do. Because there is actually a feature where if you neglect the tower for too long, it shrinks. So you have to every once in a while just go home and throw a couple rupees in it. Otherwise, it will literally reset your progress. And this sounds terrifying, right? It's like, oh no, that sounds super stressful, which is exactly what I thought when I first played it. But in practice, what actually happens is when you have about 15 minutes left before the tower shrinks, you get contacted by an NPC called Pinkle. And I'll talk about Pinkle, believe me. But she contacts you and she says, hey, the tower's looking a little, it's looking a little weak. I think it needs some rupees. And so you go, oh, okay. And then you literally, on your menu, you have a button called Return Home. Wherever you are, as long as you are outside, you can hit this button and Tingle will just inflate his balloon and fly home, straight to his house. Which then, of course, the tower is directly to his west, so you can just go climb up the tower and go right back to where you were. Alright, so it looks like I'm actually just about out of time here. As I said, we will be doing one more segment of this where I sort of talk about some of the more spoilery stuff. There's actually a lot that I didn't even get to that I really wanted to talk about, but it's so much content that I can't quite fit it all into about a 10-minute time slot. So, once again, I've been Justin Fulvarsic. I don't really have any socials for you to follow. Don't worry about that. Just follow Zelda Universe and I'll be happy. And please give this game a shot. And I encourage you, if you are intrigued by this game, if you think it sounds cool, neat, or just plain interesting, please play the game before you listen to the next segment. It's definitely worth it if you can stand it. I will just say, use a guide, look up the prices. You don't need to torture yourself like that. So thanks again for tuning in, and I hope to see you again when we do the next segment.
Well, Justin, thank you for that explanation of Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land. I was looking for justification as to why the segment existed and so far have found none. I'm looking forward to, but possibly not really, the next installment of this segment where you actually justify why you like this game and hope that that's the last one. Eden, do you like this game?
I've never played it.
Do you like Tingle?
I think he's super obnoxious, and I think I hate him because I see a lot of him in me, because I don't know. For especially the
people, we're getting deep.
Especially people on the forums who seen my posts, I sort of like, especially fairy Pokemon. Fairy type is my favorite because they're wonderful, and I will go around just posting, "Hey, fairies!" or something like that on the forums. Not like most, usually in like the sub community forums, but and I think part of me hates that, and so I'm sort of projecting that onto Tingle. I think this went in a direction that is going to be weird, but this went in a weird direction. But you know what? I'm going to stand by it.
I'm going to assume that most of the podcast listeners are not hyper familiar with the forums, and just relate that the one award that I got for a forum post, which apparently they give awards for, was because of a Zelda fan theory. I think it was best Zelda fan theory of the year or the month or whatever. And it had to do with Tingle. Do you want to know what it is, Eden?
Oh, I vaguely remember this. Please remind me and our listeners.
I think it was just a forum thread about what's your favorite or best Zelda theory. And mine was very simply worded. And this is probably not verbatim because I'm just going off memory from years ago. But it was roughly, there is a fourth Triforce of greed, and it has been passed down through the lineage of Tingles.
Oh,
that's it. That's the theory. That won an award. That one sentence.
Back in the day, that would have gotten you murdered on in the theorizing board because you mentioned fourth Triforce piece.
Well, see, that's the hook, right? That's what gets people's attention, right? There's a fourth Triforce, and then they're like, oh, here we go again with some other kid thinking there's a hole in the Triforce, right? And then it just goes off the rails from there.
But, I mean, it's actually really cool. That's a nice idea.
That
It kind of makes a lot of sense.
It doesn't at all, but I'm glad that you like it.
Yeah.
Evidently, many people on the forums also did. So thank you very much, Justin, for your guest contribution.
Yes, and you, yes, you, listener, if you would like to be on the podcast, all you need is a microphone and a topic to talk about. If you're interested in contributing a segment, you can reach out to Zelda Universe in a lot of ways. We'll list those off at the end. But the best bet is emailing us. That's podcast@zeldauniverse.net. Or if you are on the forums, feel free to send me a private message. My username is Eslo Spirit. And we'll get talking, see if we can't make it happen. And we will look forward, or some of us, Elias notwithstanding, will look forward to Justin's next Rosy Rupee Land segment.
Just keep in mind that if you do private message Eslo Spirit on the forums, be ready for mini fairy references.
Togepi. You're going to get Togepi references.
Mm.
It's my forte. On that note, going from a kind of wild spin-off that really happened, believe it or not, let's shift over to one man's idea for another spin-off that has not happened yet. If it ever will. We'll see. Randy is back with another edition of What If Zelda Was, this time with one that I don't think any of us saw coming. What If Zelda Was an Unpacking Game? Kind of specific. Well, we'll see how it goes. Take it away, Randy.
So I've moved around a lot in my life. Like, a lot. I did the math, and I've moved home 17 times in my life, not counting temporary housing as a holdover between proper moves. I've lived in several states, several cities, and for a while there, I lived in the country Panama. And I promise, this is going somewhere, just stick with me. In this time, I've done a lot of packing and unpacking, a tiresome process that often leaves me physically and spiritually drained. I don't like change, contrary to moving habits, so it always takes a little extra out of me. That said, I've gotten pretty good at moving. My packing is a bit iffy, but once we get to a new place, I'll have a set of boxes within the first couple days. So there's a game that came out recently called Unpacking, and as you might immediately understand, it struck a chord with me. I haven't quite finished it yet, but this isometric pixel art game about unpacking and finding a home for all your stuff in your new place has really resonated with me. The story is about a young girl and her life going one move at a time, and it's very all minimalistic in its presentation, but you get to piece the story of her life together one box at a time. So I had an idea that I kind of can't get out of my head now, and so I was going to propose it to you here. In the spirit of Cadence of Hyrule and other indie games borrowing Nintendo franchises, what if The Legend of Zelda was an unpacking game? I don't know what the audio equivalent of a late title card is, but here it is. Hello, I'm Randy, assistant news editor at Zelda Universe, and this is my series called What If Zelda Was? It takes a look at a lot of different ideas of other things Zelda games could be. It's because I'm of the mind that Hyrule is so vast and fluctuating that it can be almost anything we want it to be, whether an on-rails training shooter or a match 3 puzzler. I'm sure that's going to be done at some point in our lives. Today I want to think about the life of a young hero as he moves about Hyrule and how he can experience his adventure becoming a new hero through the art of taking stuff out of boxes and putting it on shelves. One of the reasons this idea came to me and made me immediately excited to present is because I measure my life by Zelda releases. With as often as I've moved and all the places I've been and people I've known, the Zelda series has been one of a very limited number of constants in my life. As such, I measure the gaps of time in my life by where I was when a Zelda game came out. It's a bit silly, sure. I do it with other games too, but none other than Mario have really struck that chord with me, been with me for that long, and impacted me that much. And so perhaps it is my turn to imagine the other way around, to imagine Link and his journey to become a hero box by box rather than dungeon by dungeon. Part of this concept requires figuring out how or why Link would be packing and unpacking on his journey. I think maybe he wouldn't be finding a house per se every single time, and given the various locations of Hyrule, there's probably a lot of places we want to visit. Some of the locations would probably be more short-term housing, like tents and cabins, while he's investigating the areas for clues or monsters. All of this, of course, would be reflected in the location and the things he acquired that we'll find in the next area. I'm also going to assume a new adventure with a fairly standard Zelda story, but obviously this would be a great chance to break away and do some new story ideas. So for the first house, I figure we'll be following a young Link arriving at in a new home in a village, probably in a forest like Ghoradon. We'll unpack a lot of fairly standard things for a young boy to have, some clothes, some toys, some books, perhaps a slingshot, and a wooden sword and shield. Nothing fancy, he's not on a quest yet, he's still living his life. Once we finish, we'll skip to the next time he has to unpack in his life. This new home would be less forested outside, but feels very cramped on the inside. There's not a lot of space to work with. Now we're unpacking a lot of the same items, but a lot of them have burned and have scorch marks. The sword has been maybe snapped in half, and a lot of his things are missing. The last thing he places is a pendant, and while it's not explicitly said, it could perhaps be assumed that it belonged to his mother. Heavy stuff. A third unpack, maybe one more home that he was forced to due to a monster attack. More broken items, even fewer total, but this time, a monster's fang and his father's sword. The next time we have to help Link move into a new home, it's a barrack shared with another soldier. He's joined the Hyrule military and begun training. His father's sword, his mother's pendant, a monster fang made into a necklace, and maybe one or two small trinkets from his youth. And finally, his new armor from the Royal Guard, piece by piece, put away cleanly and correctly like a good soldier should. Skipping forward a few different places we can fill stuff in with, Link has become the champion. Blue tunic, master sword, Hylian shield all up on the wall. He's in a cabin, and there's snow falling outside. He's in a colder region, likely Hebra. He unpacks some worn clothes for the trip, as well as a map, compass, and journal chronicling his travels. He's here in search for something, maybe a legendary monster, a dungeon, or a key item. In the next few moves, new items could be acquired, recognizable things like a hookshot and a lens of truth. There'd be many things we've never seen before, as Hyrule continues to have so many secrets to uncover. What if before becoming champion he found a second and third pendant? What if now he collected items from different regions he's been to? Perhaps some personal items, gifts from other characters we haven't met, or trinkets to remember the passing of someone we've never learned about. A series like Zelda is rife with content that could be plucked to put this together. A story of Link told from the perspective of the things he carried with him on his travels seems almost too perfect. Even if you wanted to do it following Ocarina of Time's hero, the same formula applies. We could just have to broaden some concepts a bit, give some places a little more room for him to stay in. But moving into the forest, then out of the forest with his new sword and shield, into Kakariko Village or Castle Town, and then beyond. After his final confrontation with Ganondorf, we could follow his life as a kid, with all his adult knowledge and perspective. We'd follow him back to Termina to find his horse and save the world from a mask-wearing menace. It's all quite easy to imagine, though the details required would be somewhat difficult. Otherwise, it might just be too shallow of an experience and just unpacking his item menu board. I've long since said that the Legend of Zelda series is carried on the backs of its unique characters, and it would be quite the trip to experience them without ever showing a single one. What characters do you think we could include on this journey, and how would you represent their effects on the hero in his adventure to save Hyrule? Thank you for listening to me once again as I discuss random game ideas that come to my head. I still have an idea for a big MMO kicking around, but I'm going to save that for maybe a finale or something. I hope you've enjoyed this fanciful trip through what-if game designs as I continue sharing more, but until then, stay safe and take care of each other.
Well, Randy, that was a very interesting idea for a possible Zelda spinoff.
Interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, unpacking. I mean, I didn't know you could even make a game out of that, but apparently somebody did.
I think I would enjoy this game more than Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land.
But isn't that just such a low bar that you'll enjoy any game more than Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land?
Not any game, but yes, it is a low bar.
Okay. Oh.
Maybe. So congrats, Randy, on pitching a slightly higher bar.
Yeah, I mean, I think Randy said this, that his the idea that he talked about in his segments kind of bare bones and on its own probably wouldn't be a workable game.
Randy, I want you to know that the next What If Zelda Was segment I expect from you should be a fully fleshed out video game pitch, ready to pitch to studios and Nintendo, Miyamoto himself. If it's anything less than that, I'm going to be highly disappointed.
Oh man, now you're setting the bar way too high for him.
It's what I do, Eden. I set the bar very high. Either way, thank you for your postulation, Randy. It was something to listen to for sure.
It was. I didn't hear. It didn't seem very Zelda-ish, but again,
what do you mean we're not breaking pots? We're moving them into storage containers. Storage containers.
I made that connection while I was listening. Like, we already do like find things in containers, but like I can't imagine putting them back on a shelf. Like,
yeah, Link is about chaos, not order.
Yeah, you never thought of it that way. You're right.
Chaotic good, 100%. Well, I think that does it, Eden. I'm all out of segments to talk about.
And that's a wrap on our 20th episode, since we resurrected ourselves back in 2018. And originally we were going to do a little something special for that. I was going to get like bunch of like the staff to talk about their favorite moments or whatever, and we'll probably do that eventually, but it didn't work out this time. But you know, I'd still like to take a couple minutes to just thank all my staff, thank you the listeners, thank the Zelda Universe website overall. When I started contributing to the ye old ZU cast back in 2009, the past 3 years have been a ride. We've had ups, we've had downs. I like to think that we've been putting out some really great content. Podcasts in general are experiencing a renaissance that they've been experiencing for the past decade, but apparently they're still going through a renaissance. And I hope that you, our listeners, have enjoyed the ride with us so far. And thank you, thank the staff. I already went over this, but thanks again all around. And that's how we're gonna celebrate this 20th episode, because that's all we got.
Eden, for as many notes as I give for the podcast, you have done an outstanding job resurrecting it, as you so aptly put. So great job. And just to go ahead and get out in the front, since I'm here, and might as well. My favorite, my fondest memory of the past 20 episodes really has been any time I've been on it. So that's a multi-way tie there for me, for my thing there. Yeah.
Okay. Do you like to hear yourself talk?
Absolutely. 100%. Without a doubt.
All right, cool. Well, then you'll have to come on more often. Give us more fake Zelda history or whatever. Appear in the bloopers. Just completely unannounced.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode, folks.
Yes, thank you so much for listening. I keep thanking people. I stand by it.
Where can people find this podcast, Eden?
You can find it wherever you're currently listening to it, be that YouTube or Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon/Audible. Where else are we? I think we were on Stitcher, but I think the feed got messed up or something, so we're working on that. We're around wherever you get your podcasts. You can subscribe, you can go back, listen to the first 19 episodes, plus we've got a couple like standalone roundtables and other things that should be good listens on your commute or whenever you listen to podcasts. So yeah, we're around.
Yeah. And if you want to follow Zelda Universe in general, we're all around on social media, all the platforms. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, YouTube, OnlyFans, anything you can think of, we're there. If we're not Zelda Universe, we're Zelda Universe TV, specifically on YouTube, Twitch, and Instagram.
Yeah, we're even on TikTok now. That's weird. Yeah,
forgot about that.
That makes me feel old, because I'm not on TikTok.
Just makes me feel sad. That's all I can think of, Eden. Is there anything else you can think of before we close out this 20th episode of the ZUcast Revivification?
I can't really think of anything. I guess we're not going to see anybody, but you'll hear from us in the new year, 2022. Here we come. Hopefully, we'll all do better next year.
Hopefully. Eden, thank you very much for being my co-host and for being responsible for this entire podcast on this episode.
It is my pleasure. Until next time.
See you later.
Hey everyone, Elias has left the studio, but I stayed behind so I could shower more gratitude upon my staff, this time by name. Yes, folks, it's time for the credits. This episode's hosts were Elias Thompson and myself, Eden Biskin. Shona Johnson presented the sixth part of her Zelda History Chronicle. History. Brian Thomas returned from the dead to complain about Nintendo's lackluster acknowledgement of the Zelda franchise's 35th anniversary. Can you really blame him? Nice to have you back, Brian. Randy Marr pitched his idea for the Zelda spin-off we never knew we wanted. Special thanks to Justin Fulvarsic for contributing a primer on Elias's absolute favorite spin-off, Freshly Picked Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land. He looks forward to the conclusion. The executive producer and Zelda Universe Forums liaison is myself. Cody Davies is our consulting producer and insert snappy Cody quip here. Kelly Timmerman is our head editor. Andy Bundy is our assistant editor. Mary Stowe is our social media liaison. Caden Garvey and Alexandria Gribble are our graphic designers. You are our listener, with a capital L. The ZU Cast is a production of the ZUBC, a division of Zelda Universe's media team. You'll find the ZU Cast wherever you get your podcasts, including YouTube. If you want to let us know what you thought of this or any other episode of the ZU Cast, you should email us at podcast@zeldauniverse.net, or if you are a member of the ZU Forums, post in Community Central's ZU Cast Hub thread. You can also interact with Zelda Universe on social media. That's at Zelda Universe on Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok, and at Zelda Universe TV on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitch. As I mentioned earlier in the episode, if you have an idea for a Legend of Zelda-related segment that you would be interested in putting together for us, please reach out to us by email, again, podcast@zeldauniverse.net, or by shooting me, Eslo Spirit, a private message on the ZU forums. Just so you know what to expect, we cap guest segments at 10 minutes apiece, and your segment shouldn't be too similar to an existing segment. If we like your idea, we'll guide you throughout the process of getting it into an episode of the podcast. Well, that's the end, the real end, of episode 20 of the ZU Cast. Thanks so much again for your support over the past 3 years or so, and here's to another 20, or 40, episodes of the podcast. Happy New Year, everyone. Yeah. Hi, Kelly.
Hello, Kelly.
Hello, Kelly.
For this podcast, Elias Thompson. And joining me is
Eden.
Podcast Reviver. Oh. Okay. Wow. You jumped the gun.
I didn't realize you were doing any more intro. Okay.
You just really wanted me to stop talking, huh, Eden?
No, you're good. Okay. I need to turn up the
Wow. Okay. Well, anyway, okay. We are here. Live, except not at all, to bring you. I think we should just jump right into it. So, Shona,
what about the rest of the schedule?
Lineup? Oh, should we just preview the whole rest of the schedule?
That's what I usually do. Who's been doing some? What is he doing again? Is he like? I'm totally blanking out on what he does. He's
I don't work with him, so I don't know for sure. I think it's related DevOps? To Zelda Wiki.
Yeah, I remember him on the Wiki.
And DevOps, yes.
He was on the Wiki when I was on the Wiki.
Something very, very technical that I do not fully understand.
So he's a tech dude. No, that sounds... okay. These are fun.
Incredibly
words.
Reductive, yet also extremely accurate.
It is. I mean, I call myself a tech dude all the time. So Justin is another member of staff. Oh my goodness. Kelly's going to have a blast editing this part.
Hello, Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. You're welcome.
Reasons. After that, we will, of course, have the credits and the Oops, I Crapped My Pants segment, also known as bloopers.
Yeah, so bloopers. If I wasn't meant to be read aloud.
Well, you should have told me that beforehand, Eden, because I just did.
I mean, so I don't know if you've been following the outlines for the episodes, but I always like put something stupid, like, whoopsie,
and I always read them.
And you always read them out loud.
But enough about Oops, I Crap My Pants. Up next, right now, is Shona's segment, Zelda History Part 6, 2011 through 2015. Shona, if you would not mind, please take us down this journey down memory lane.
Woo!
Did you want to record any of that, or you think it'll be good?
I look forward to hearing what Kelly does with all that, because that was a little bit of a mess.
Gonna hold for this airplane really quick. Sorry, there was an airplane I was holding for it.
But that's excellent. Shona. Why would you not mention that? For shame. Just kidding, I love
you. Yeah, Shona. What the heck, girl? I'm proud of you.
Thank you. All right. I guess that... I wonder how your Twitch team feels about that.
You want to go?
Twitch team versus podcast team. Should have like a Smash tournament or something. I don't know.
Well, see, we would. Or but a we fight would show up live ready to go because we're Twitch, but then you guys would just record something later and we'd have to wait few months for it to be edited, and it would be a whole process. It would take way too long. I don't know if it would work out.
No, on that thought, yeah, probably not. We're too slow for that.